coming up on the My Ag Life Daily News Report, getting exports, not empty containers, out of California, and changes to the Farmers to Family Food Box program. Hear what Ag Secretary Vilsack told a House committee Wednesday. And we have today's news brief. But first, we catch up with springtime in San Diego. Joining us today is Executive Director of the San Diego County Farm Bureau, Hannah Bay.
So we talked a couple of months ago and just got an update on San Diego. I thought I'd check in again and see how things are going down south. I keep in close contact with Central California because that's where I'm from, obviously. So fill me in. How is spring going down where you're at?
Spring? Oh, well, things are going great down here in San Diego County in terms of agriculture. We're really pleased to see quite a different situation than we did a year ago when the lockdown was issued. What we're seeing is a surge in demand for all agricultural products. It's very exciting. You know, certainly that comes with challenges because over the last number of months, our farmers have had to scale down. They've even, you know, not only scaled down their workforce, but scaled down their plantings because the future was very hard to predict. But now what we are seeing is, again, an extreme surge in demand from consumers, from everything to cut flowers to those, you know, community-supported agriculture boxes, to the farmers markets, to the garden centers. All of that has been incredibly busy, very busy over Easter weekend. So that is just a great place to be, you know, on a path and a trajectory towards recovery.
Can we talk a little bit more about the community boxes? Because that it was already pretty well developed before pre-COVID, but around the whole nation, it seems like that became even bigger and more people participating from the consumer side and also from the farmer side. Did San Diego County see that as well?
Absolutely. You know, during the shelter in place order and this past year where everybody has had to be socially distanced and hesitant to leave their own homes, you know, the offerings where you can not leave your house, but still gain access to fresh fruits and vegetables has skyrocketed. We have seen time and time again, our producers not able to keep up with the demand from the consumers to purchase these CSA boxes. And here in San Diego County, it's very common to offer, say, a 20-week program for $500. And every week I'm charged, you know, a small portion of that. And I get a big, huge, fresh box of seasonal vegetables delivered right to my doorstep. Or if you're in a little bit more of a rural area, you have the centralized drop spots. And it's just been wonderful. The consumers, you know, on social media are raving about discovering all the new agricultural products that San Diego has to offer. So we're thrilled to have made that connection during these hard times, help bridging the urban-rural gap. And again, our farmers, you know, have loved to see an opportunity to pivot their models, because before, where they were selling to places like the casinos or the schools or the restaurants, and that demand, you know, absolutely declined substantially, having the CSAs to bridge that gap has been, you know, just fundamental to surviving the last year. And it's actually been so large of a demand that many of our farmers have had to start partnering with their neighboring farms to say, what do you have to offer? Because I can't keep up with my CSA subscriptions this month. So that's a great place to be.
Yeah, absolutely it is. And kind of along the same lines, what's the farmers market scene like in San Diego? And I'm sure that that has gone through some changes over the last year. Are things coming back?
Oh, yes. Farmers markets have been a challenge in San Diego County actually for a number of years. Probably about 5 years ago, there was a huge surge from consumers to see more farmers markets. And it was, you know, hot and trendy for you to go and take your family to the farmers market on the weekends. And we had a lot of farmers markets. We had probably over 60 operational in the county. And then 3 years ago, we saw a pretty steep decline in consumer demand for the farmers market. We might have still had people going through and walking through the markets, but the cash being exchanged from consumer to farmer was not happening. And a lot of our markets closed. Probably 15 to 20 markets had to shut down pre-pandemic simply because we didn't have that demand from the consumers anymore. And, you know, as a sidebar, that's not always a bad thing, because instead of at the farmer's market, we might have seen people shopping at their local grocery store that offered the local section, or buying into the CSA box that was more, you know, convenient for that individual. So I can't exactly say the whole demand went away, but certainly the farmer's market venues were not as popular. And then the pandemic hit. And, you know, by law, we all had to shut down. And here at the Farm Bureau, we allied with San Diego Markets and helped lobby the state government to deem farmers markets as an essential service. And so they were able to reopen. And when they reopened, they certainly were not the same. They had to undergo a wide variety of public health, you know, modifications, social distancing, capacity limitations, making sure the vendors don't allow consumers to touch any of the produce anymore. Probably the most challenging part, beyond the actual public and health safety measures that had to be implemented, was we saw consumers not happy with these new measures, and we saw them very combative about wearing a mask at the market. So we received phone calls saying, we're going to sue your market because you're making people wear masks. Whereas as the market managers, to hold the market legally, we were required by law to request people wear a mask. And so that was a challenge. But again, today, months later, you know, in April of 2021, we are hopefully returning to the new normal. And so by that, I mean, we are seeing consumers wanting to go back to farmers markets, not only because we're seeing restrictions lifted, we're seeing people more comfortable to go out into public spaces with other people around, but also because farmers markets serve as an agritourism operation. And there is a dire need to get out of the house, particularly if you have small children, for some place safe to go that can be entertaining. And farmers markets fill that community niche, that community offering. And so we're excited to, you know, most of them are operational now, and we're entering into the, you know, busy season of summer, and we're seeing the restrictions lifting in San Diego County. So we have a lot of hope for the future here.
We're going to take a quick break for our sponsors. When we come back, we continue the interview and we hear about activity from animal rights activists in San Diego. We'll be right back.
Agromayor Nursery is the premier nursery in California. Whether it's almonds, walnuts, pistachios, prunes, or olives, Agromayora has been the grower's source for over 20 years and is the home of Root Pack R Almond, Grizzly Walnut, and the North American plants UCB1 and Platinum Clonal Pistachio Rootstocks. As the worldwide leader in super high-density almonds, olives, and prunes, Agromayora can show you how to cut costs and increase yields with their super high-density rootstock Root Pack 20. For more information or to schedule a site visit, contact a representative at 530-812-3398 today. The My Ag Life Daily News Report is brought to you in part by the California Walnut Board.
Welcome back. We continue now talking with Hannah Bay of the San Diego Farm Bureau.
They heard from other farmers markets managers at a conference a few weeks ago, virtual conference a few weeks ago. Same problem around the state with the mask issue. People just were not happy with it and didn't understand that in many, you know, the farmers markets managers were following the law, and it wasn't their doing, but you have to follow the laws. And there's a lot of laws, not even COVID related, but there's a lot of regulations for farmers markets as well, right? Just kind of
across the board. Absolutely. It is actually quite a barrier to offering fresh fruits and vegetables to, you know, communities that are, say, food deserts. The amount of red tape required to establish a certified farmers market here in San Diego County, when I was a market manager, I had to pull, I think, at least 7 approvals from different government entities. I had to get a mug shot, a background check. I had to pay an exorbitant amount of fees. And it was very difficult to make your market in the green after all of those challenges. It really should not be that difficult to sell a vegetable to a consumer. I do understand that there are bad actors that have perhaps created that situation today, but I think that we could streamline the process to make it more conducive. And I will say, you know, you're just 100% right. Everybody wants to touch and smell, you know, your vegetables. And what's really interesting, so down here in San Diego County, we have been working very closely with our tuna dockside harbor market. And that is our fishing market where, you know, our fleet of San Diego fishermen go out into the San Diego waters and they bring it back to downtown San Diego on a dock, literally, you know, right in the heart of downtown. And they sell those fish straight to consumers. And it is awesome to see. They'll have live, you know, sea urchin and crabs. They'll have whole fishes. And even that market has been impacted by the pandemic, not only in terms of they used to have, you know, fish tanks where children could touch the fish, right? Because you want to connect consumers to their food system. It's important to understand where your food's coming from. So they had to get rid of that. But you know what has been really disturbing and unfortunate is the animal rights activists have really kicked up their efforts in San Diego and targeted our fishermen and our tuna harbor market. And they have said that this is a wet market that causes coronavirus like China. And we have found this just so deeply offensive that they are trying to make this connection. This particular market is one of the nation's most sustainable fishing operations. It's a model of success. So we, over the last month, have met with nearly every city council member on the city of San Diego to explain how this extreme animal rights group is very detrimental, not only to our fishermen that are in their districts, but also to our agricultural producers that are in different areas of the county. We also had to meet with our port commissioners because it's on the Port of San Diego land. And, you know, the one good thing of having to engage your policymakers on difficult topics like animal rights activists is when you present the facts, they are hard to argue. And our local policymakers have been quite supportive of our fishermen. And we're now looking to expand a market to South San Diego. So through all the challenges of having to, you know, do a lot of lobbying and political education, you know, we're winning the fight down here and we're expanding our agritourism operations because that is what a huge skyrocketing demand that we've seen, particularly for City of San Diego, which is the second largest city in the whole state of California. You need those operations right there in the heart of San Diego, where you can get out of your apartment and connect to your natural environment. It is so important. And it's just really unfortunate that a small faction of individuals are trying to advance a vegan agenda under the guise of, you know, wet markets or even sustainability. So that is certainly something we've been engaged on recently here in San Diego.
Yeah. Can we expand on that just for the, you know, for the sake of our listeners? Most of our, like I always say, our listeners are primarily agriculture, but this goes out on the internet. So we don't know who all is listening. So let's go expand if we can and explain the differences and why this is not a wet market like what we have seen in other countries.
Well, you know, to be quite frank, I don't think they have figured out the cause of coronavirus to begin with. Here in California, agricultural operations are heavily, heavily regulated. So our fishing market is under extreme scrutiny by the Department of Public Health. They are out there regularly to inspect. We operate it in, in compliance with the new slew of laws that they have, you know, required with the pandemic, because rightly so. And there is just simply no evidence. It is just not even based in reality, this argument. It's quite frankly offensive to even have to address it or say it out loud. This is a fishing operation where we are simply selling fish to the public. And, you know, I will tell you, these same individuals are upset that when a fish is on ice, it might flop. Well, fish in the fishing industry are for eating. And this is part of the cycle of food production. It is more important for you to connect to your cycle of food production than to turn a blind eye and drive through McDonald's and get a fish sandwich and pretend like none of this is happening. So it's all education. You know, with the animal rights activists, when you look at the global population, 95% of the global population eats animal products of some kind. This extreme group attacking San Diego livestock producers and fishermen is pushing a vegan agenda. They don't want livestock production of any kind. They attack my dairies, they attack my cattle ranchers, they'll attack the chicken farmers. It really doesn't matter. Whatever they can sensationalize it with, they will do. What is so unfortunate is oftentimes they are saying livestock production is not environmentally friendly. Therefore, you should stop eating meat, stop drinking dairy because it's more environmentally friendly. And again, factually, that is inaccurate. When you look at the science, when you talk about methane emissions with livestock here in San Diego County, when somebody says, well, livestock emissions contribute so significantly to greenhouse gas emissions, that's factually inaccurate. That is not what the data says. The data shows 5% emissions in San Diego County from my agriculture industry as a whole. 5% is less than the national average of agriculture, which is 9%. 9% nationally of greenhouse gas emissions attributed to agriculture is not a significant contributor to climate change. And we are not even just talking about methane emissions. The methane emissions from livestock, cows farting, is less than the 9%. And so here in San Diego County, what we are trying to do is message reality and facts to our consumers, which is when you are increasing your anti-agricultural rhetoric and your anti-agricultural attacks, you are pushing our local food producers out of business. And you are not changing your demand from the consumers at all. And in response to you driving out our local farmers, you are increasing your environmental impact because that food that used to be produced locally is now being imported from dirty sources, less ethical sources, slave labor sources, sources with zero environmental regulations. And here we are in San Diego County, the leaders and the best. You know, it is inarguable that California agriculture is, you know, some of the most environmentally friendly in the entire world, and we've been regulated to that place. And so it's so unfortunate that, you know, some groups are again pushing a personal dietary agenda to a larger, you know, group that includes our policymakers a lot of the time, and their impacts end up being incredibly unenvironmentally friendly and unsustainable. So it is, unfortunately, it's a statewide and a national issue. But here in San Diego, we are trying very hard to get ourselves into the middle of the issue, let people know the actual truth about agriculture, connect people with their food system. And I will tell you, these animal rights activists have actually tried to come recently to the Farm Bureau and ask if we would partner with them on things like moratoriums throughout the county of San Diego on slaughterhouses. And, you know, our message is we do not align with extremist groups that like to terrorize and harass our local farming industry. You know, there is a place for constructive conversations and dialogues and working on issues that perhaps we don't share the same perspectives on. And we are all for that at the Farm Bureau, having those hard discussions. But if you're gonna be part of a group that walks onto our farming community and tries to steal their livestock under the guise of rescuing it, you are not welcome here. You will not have our support or our ally.
All right, now I know the topic when I want to get you fired up.
I know, right? I'm getting mad over here.
But you're correct. You're correct about every single word that you said is correct.
They take way too much of my time. It is shocking how much time and effort you have to dedicate to this. But honestly, I would much rather have the Farm Bureau as a target of these animal rights activists than any of my personal livestock producers in the county.
Yeah, that is true. That is true. Those are all the topics that I had. Is there anything else that you'd like to get off your chest today?
No, I think, you know, the only other thing that is maybe relevant to the times that we're doing here in San Diego County is we're real pleased that on-site farm vaccine distributions are starting up here in San Diego County. So we've got multiple events going on this week where Cal Fire is going out to farm sites to vaccinate farm workers. Local, you know, health clinics are going out to the sites to vaccinate the farm workers. So we're really pleased that that day has come, and we're really excited for, you know, starting the new normal.
Thank you again to Hannah Bay of the San Diego Farm Bureau. Our news brief is coming up next. We'll be right back.
Having problems with nematodes? ProMax is your number one solution. ProMax is a powerful fungicide nematicide that works to kill and control nematodes and soil-borne disease. ProMax is a powerful and easy-to-use product in your fields. WaterRite Technologies is your source for this powerful solution. Visit WRTAG.com/ProMax for more information.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcasts, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
Here's your news brief for today from the California Farm Bureau. With California farmers and ranchers finding increasing difficulty in purchasing wildfire insurance, the state insurance commissioner directed insurance companies to provide data about the availability of commercial coverage for businesses, including farms and ranches. The California Farm Bureau welcomed the action, saying it hoped the request from insurance commissioner Ricardo Lara will lead to more sustainable coverage for farmers and ranchers. Also from the Farm Bureau, farmers in the Klamath Basin are expected to receive a water allocation this week from the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation, and all indications point to extreme shortage. Drought and regulations protecting fish species mean farmers may have little or no water from the federal Klamath Project. A leading farmer in the basin says this second dry year, combined with the COVID-19 pandemic, will have a compounding effect that will hit the community hard. The U.S. Department of Agriculture announced the availability of up to $10 million in assistance from USDA's Wildfire and Hurricane Indemnity Program Plus to assist agricultural producers impacted by the worsening drought conditions in the Klamath River Basin. Rod Bain has more.
Asked Wednesday during a House Agriculture Committee hearing about addressing drought and water supply concerns in the West, Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack replied,
"We'll continue to take a look at the full range of resources that we have under the various programs to provide help and assistance to farmers as they struggle through a very difficult time."
Among those efforts, also announced Wednesday, availability of up to $10 million in assistance to producers in the Klamath River Basin impacted by worsening drought conditions. The assistance through the Wildfire and Hurricane Indemnity Program Plus will provide California and Oregon block grant funding for payments to producers impacted by drought losses in 2018 and 2019. More details about WIP Plus and eligibility requirements for Klamath Basin producers are available through local Farm Service Agency offices or online at www.farmers.gov. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
The U.S. Department of Agriculture will soon implement the Dairy Donation Program as established in the Consolidated Appropriations Act of 2021. The program will facilitate the timely donation of dairy products to nonprofit organizations who distribute food to people in need and prevent and minimize food waste. Because the statute allows retroactive reimbursements of donations made before donation and distribution plans are approved, USDA is providing advance notice of minimum provisions to be included in the program to encourage the dairy industry to process and donate surplus milk supplies as it moves through the spring surplus milk production season. Despite a slight improvement in the nation's topsoil moisture numbers, there are still widespread shortages around the country. Stephanie Ho has more.
USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey notes some modest improvement in the nation's topsoil moisture picture.
Largely due to rain that fell across the eastern half of the country, topsoil moisture rated very short to short, coming in at 33% on April 11th. That's down 2 points from last week, but still a very serious situation.
He says New Mexico is the top state for moisture shortages.
85% very short to short among states from the plains westward. Right behind New Mexico is North Dakota, 83%. That's actually a 9-point improvement from last week's 92%, as they did see a little bit of rain in the southeastern corner of the state.
States from the Pacific coast to the plains with topsoil moisture more than 50% very short to short include
California, Oregon, Montana, Wyoming, Colorado, Texas, and South Dakota.
He says drought also may be creeping back to New England. This is Stephanie Ho for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
That's our news brief for today. Hear questions a California congressman had for Ag Secretary Vilsack right after this.
Soil and Crop Incorporated is your number one resource for sustainable nutrition. Growers are faced with difficult challenges, and Soil and Crop Inc. has the experience, fertilizer, and biological portfolio to dramatically increase yield and performance in your troubled orchards and fields. Contact Soil and Crop Incorporated today for a free consultation on how we can help reverse the challenges you face as a conventional or organic grower so you can increase your bottom line and become a better sustainable farmer. Contact us today at 559-564-1236 or visit our website at www.callnrg.com. Soil and Crop, putting nature to work for you.
Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack testified at a hearing of the House Agriculture Appropriations Subcommittee Wednesday. He says the USDA will end the Farmers to Families Food Box program established by the Trump administration, but will continue to distribute the produce and dairy products that became popular with food banks and other beneficiaries. Representative David Valadeo of California had questions about the plan, as well as several other issues, including the drought in the state.
But the most important pressing issue that we're struggling with today in the Central Valley. I want to thank you first for designating the 50 California counties, including my entire district, on March 5th as a primary national disaster area due to the ongoing drought. Just last Thursday, you and the Secretary of Interior, Deb Haaland, released a statement acknowledging the critical drought in the West. Well, I thank you for this acknowledgement. More needs to be done and to help our farmers and our water users in California. Agriculture production is a large part of our economy, but having a safe and reliable food supply is a serious national security issue for our country as well. Would you please tell me how the USDA plans to assist the Central Valley of California as we deal with this horrible historic drought?
A couple of things, Representative. We're going to take a look at reconstituting the drought task force and resiliency task force that we had during the Obama administration when we dealt the last time with a drought in California, to make sure that we're taking a look at the full range and suite of assistance that we can provide to producers, and to make sure that we do this in an interagency process to make sure it's not just the USDA, but we make sure that other departments that potentially have equities here are brought into the process. Secondly, I think it's important for us to continue doing research. The better we are at utilizing the scarce water resources we have, obviously, it will allow us to deal with drought more effectively and more efficiently. And I think the ARS is very much, our Agricultural Research Service is very much involved in this, as is NIFA. And obviously, we'll continue to take a look at the full range of resources that we have under the various programs to provide help and assistance to farmers as they struggle through a very difficult time. So we fully appreciate the challenges they have. We are aware of it, and we will do everything we can to help.
I appreciate that. Now, I appreciate you bringing up that you would work with other agencies. I think that's important that we have a broad approach to this, obviously very complicated and important topic, addressed as quickly as possible. And then another one, and I know I've got a couple minutes here. USDA took bold action in 2020 to utilize monies made available by Congress to purchase billions of dollars worth of U.S. farm products for distribution to families in need throughout through the Farmers to Families Food Box program. While the program was a success in many ways, it also created unintended volatility in the U.S. dairy industry, as cheese was mandated product under the product under the program, and while other products like butter were largely left out of the boxes. This created huge imbalances between dairy farmers driven only by whether their farm was supplying to a favored cheese manufacturing sector. USDA recently held all-day listening session and comment period on the issue, which exposed some of these imbalances. Then today, I was surprised to read in the news that USDA is canceling this important program altogether. This action seems directly to contradict your testimony that highlights the need to address the nation's nutrition insecurity. Why are we learning about this in the news? And although it wasn't a perfect program, this program provided families with healthy, nutritious food options grown here in the U.S. What do you plan to do to provide healthy food like what was included in the food boxes to families in need?
We're going to continue to provide healthy food, but we're going to do it through the most efficient system that we have. The reality is the food box program was set up to respond to COVID. It was a response to COVID. A lot of problems with it, Representative, a lot of problems. There was a significant difference of administrative costs. In some cases, people were charged a tremendous amount just to fill the boxes. There was an inadequate accounting of where the boxes were actually delivered. There was a lot of food waste and loss that we uncovered as a result of these listening sessions. So our theory is that we create opportunities through the TFAP program, through what exists with our food banks and our food pantry system, which is incredibly efficient and incredibly effective at getting resources out to folks. So there's going to be a continuation. We just announced a produce box that will be funneled through that system. We've got the dairy donation program that we're going to set up as well to help the dairy industry. So we're going to try to take what we've learned, the best of that program, and incorporate it into our traditional regular programs, which are very efficient in terms of food distribution. So that way, I think you get the best of both worlds. You get product being used, product being available to people, nutritious product being available, but you get it through a very efficient and effective delivery mechanism that is accountable.
Well, I appreciate that. Making sure that we're actually getting American products to those who desperately need it is a priority.
Valadao later asked about the problems at the ports and other trade issues.
As you know, agriculture exports from the West, especially from California, are facing unfair treatment due to the lack of export containers and lack of willingness for shipping carriers to move our goods. But China is paying a higher fee to have the containers returned to China completely empty, leaving U.S. exports behind. The Federal Maritime Commission currently has an investigation underway on this serious issue. These exporters need all the help they can get right now. Coupled with excessive shipping costs, detention, demurrage fees, exporters are struggling to meet contract deadlines in our critical Asian markets, jeopardizing important trade relationships. Will you commit working with me, this committee, the White House, Department of Transportation, and the Federal Maritime Commission to find both an immediate solution to free up port congestion and a long-term fix to ensure that these delays and exorbitant costs are avoided in the future?
Congressman, we are already working collaboratively and certainly have encouraged the Maritime Commission to take action immediately, which they have the jurisdiction and capacity to do to begin to alleviate this very serious problem. So we are very concerned about it, as you are. Happy to work with you on it.
Well, I appreciate that. And then Secretary Vilsack, you've been a leader on speaking out about USMCA enforcement. However, we have yet to hear from the Biden administration on enforcement of Canadian commitments on dairy, as well as Mexico's numerous roadblocks erected against our agriculture exports. There's been proliferation of Mexican regulations and product standards that serve little purpose other than to impede trade. Will you commit to work with the interagency partners and the White House to ramp up engagement with Mexico to work out these differences so we could continue to trade our vital products.
Have visited with the Mexican Ag Minister about these specific issues. It was the second call that I made. The first call was to the Canadian Minister to raise issues on USMCA, and certainly have indicated a desire and concern to work, a desire and opportunity to work with USTR to make sure that the provisions of the USMCA that provide for enforcement, provide for collaboration and for consultation are utilized when and if it turns out that our trading partners aren't living up to the letter or spirit of the agreement.
Representative Jeff Fortenberry, a Republican from Nebraska, gave his thoughts on the future of agriculture. Here are his comments.
Frankly, that's what I want to talk to you about today. Just a couple of big ideas. The primary one being what I call the farm of the future. As I see it, it is the wedding of high tech and high touch, connecting the rural to the urban, the farmer to the family, the farm to the table. It's about a recreation of food culture and the use of technology to advance precision agriculture, to increase yields and revenue to the farmer, as well as advancing environmental science and security as we feed ourselves and feed the world. Mr. Secretary, as you know, America has such extraordinary natural resources, and we understand the value of stewardship of our land and also the history of technology transfer from our university systems that has created the space of American greatness through agriculture. We are so successful that we often forget. And last year, I should point this out, Secretary Vilsack, Secretary Perdue did visit my district, and I'd like to extend the same invitation to you as soon as it's possible. And what I'd like to point out is that we had everyone at the table, from traditional livestock producers, row crop producers, even a pair of twin young men who are part of a fifth generation farm, who have used entrepreneurial skills to buy the local bar on Main Street and have started growing crops, hops, for specialty whiskey production and other value add products. An amazing reality TV type of story. In addition to that, we had a young first generation American from Africa who started a niche livestock business, specialty vegetable producers, even one gentleman who has transformed a city block in Lincoln, where I live, into an urban farm. The point of all this is that we have a very large agricultural family, and it is an exciting space to consider how we align the department's expertise with this reality and new vision for agriculture. Let me discuss, Mr. Secretary, a couple of particular seize the moment options. First, it's rural broadband. And as much as I dream about megabytes and megapixels, I really think we should try to move beyond the term rural broadband to what I call a system of ecosystem of livability. In fact, I've said this term ecosystem of livability so much that Chairman Bishop is even starting to like it, I think. I may have convinced him. Anyway, the point being, this pandemic has given rise to a digital leap. And it's about telehealth and distance learning and telework and precision agriculture and e-commerce for our small businesses in our rural communities. This truly is a transformative moment if we can properly seize it. And here's the concern. When the Inspector General came to visit us recently, I asked her the question, what is the outcome metrics for success in these programs? And she said, I don't know. That's a place where we have to work together to ensure that the funds that we're expending can actually meet the holistic needs of rural communities. Second, Mr. Secretary, I want to raise the issue of the Blue Ribbon Commission for Higher Education. You were kind enough to discuss this with me in an earlier phone call. And Chairman Bishop and I have discussed this as well regarding the possibilities of new emerging consortia between 1862 and 1890 institutions, the modernization of ag research to fit the farm of the future, the values propositions for students as we wed traditional ag sciences like agronomy and animal husbandry with new emerging sciences such as environmental studies, conservation, and international development. And I'd like to request that you press NIFA now that this is a law to ensure that this work gets underway quickly. We'd appreciate that. Third big idea, Mr. Secretary, conservation. Our world is screaming for meaning. And I don't believe that any person or anything should be thrown away. And it's this deeper value of conservation, of being a good steward of the gifts of our natural resources, properly using them for our own well-being, but also regenerating them for our well-being, is a 21st century ethos that I believe has deep meaning. The question becomes then, how can we use our conservation programs for a couple of outcomes? Enhanced environmental gains combined with healthy harvesting and enhanced revenue to the farmer to meet the real possibility of sustainability, which is both regenerative and valuable at the same time. Sustainability is those two things, regeneration and return. And as we all know and celebrate, our farmers and ranchers are the first stewards of the land. So, Mr. Secretary, I know this is a bit of a more of a lighthearted opening, but I think frankly, people are fatigued by all of the government infighting. Let's get some good things done together. Look forward to working with you. Thanks so much.
Representative Jeff Fortenberry of Nebraska. On the other side of the aisle, Rosa DeLauro of Connecticut.
And my city of New Haven is one of the few cities in the country with a full-time food policy director dedicated to reforming the food system and promoting urban agriculture. The COVID-19 pandemic created the largest public health and economic crisis in a generation, and our food system was not spared. Early on, farmers faced severe supply chain disruptions that shut down their markets and threatened their livelihoods. And I appreciated your assistance and the insight that you provided to me and to my staff last summer as we were trying to address this issue. Some of the problems have been addressed, while other challenges remain. The pandemic has also pulled back the curtain on the food and nutrition crisis that continues to plague our nation. According to the U.S. Census Bureau's Household Pulse survey, hunger remains nearly three times higher than the pre-pandemic level. And households with children are more likely to report not getting enough to eat. With as many as 11 million children living in a household facing hunger, according to the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. That is unconscionable. I believe that you believe it's unconscionable. And it was Senator Robert Kennedy that said, and I quote, "I believe that as long as there is plenty, poverty is evil." The skyrocketing hunger adds to the longstanding inequities of our food system, including issues like food deserts, which restrict access to food, but importantly, fresh and healthy foods, which you're so concerned about, and disproportionately the impact on low-income people and families of color. It's especially concerning because we know that diet-related chronic diseases like obesity, hypertension, worsen COVID-19 outcomes. So in the context of building back better, Mr. Secretary, I would say you are going to be very busy. I want to thank you for your swift action in implementing the American Rescue Plan, which extended the 15% food stamp increase in the pandemic EBT program. I look forward to collaborating and partnering with you on our shared priorities.
That's our show for today. Don't forget to check out the events calendar at myaglife.com. This has been the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Sabrina Halverson from the JCS Marketing Team. Thanks for listening.